Welcome to another edition of Sports Lit 101 on the road. I'm on my way to my 50th college reunion. My wife and I are looking very much forward to being there. So we're recording this one. And as you know, if you're a regular listener of Downtown, Rich and I are both big fans of newspapers. I think they're a really important part of the fabric of America. And I subscribe to three digitally and often pick up another during the day. This week, we're going to talk about the confluence of three things that have happened that were highlighted in a New York Times article this past Sunday to do with the way college athletics has changed into an even bigger money game, where many college football players at big-time institutions make $100,000 a year through various kinds of endorsements through what's known as NIL, or name, image, and likeness. But this really starts back before the pandemic, when the first of these rules were passed that allowed athletes to make money off their name, image, or likeness. This was a way to keep athletes from being exploited by universities that would use them, use their names, their images, their likeness to raise money through the sale of jerseys with their names on them and the like, and the athletes received no compensation. For years, the NCAA had been pushed to allow something like this. They stubbornly refused, and the Supreme Court just simply finally said they had to allow it to happen. Then came the pandemic, and during the pandemic, the portal. And when the rules in the portal changed, allowing athletes to transfer easily from one school to another, name, image, and likeness money became an inducement. And as it stands now, there's some pretty chilling tales of how this has corrupted big-time football. As the David Fahrenthold and Billy Witt's article begins, the key to recruiting top college football players these days is not just a lavish training facility or a storied coach. It is ensuring the chance for them to hook up with a new type of operation that can pay them eye-popping sums collected from wealthy boosters who can often write off the donations for taking on a bit of outside work. The shift stems from a decision forced on the NCAA 2 years ago to allow payments to students, the system that has grown out of a change that is reshaping college football and other major sports by unexpectedly empowering collectives, little regulated groups that raise money from alumni. One player at Michigan State University now makes $750,000 a year. Get that number, $750,000 a year, according to the group that pays him. At Ohio State, some players not only get a paycheck, they get a free car lease to boot, courtesy of a donor collective. It's a sweet car, Rich Rickert says, a car dealer and booster for Ohio State, as he filmed himself giving a wide receiver a Dodge Challenger. We're looking for some sweet plays on the field. This was not the original intention, but it has become a fact because the NCAA has not chosen to enforce many of its rules. The collective system is a pay-for-play scheme disguised as name, image, and likeness. Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, said at a Wednesday Senate hearing this week, "We're concerned that management of college athletics is shifting away from the universities to collectives." The New York Times identified more than 120 collectives, including at least one for each school in each of the five major college conferences. That means we're talking about the big five conferences. The average starter at a big-time football program now takes in about $103,000 a year, according to Open Doors, the company that processes payments to the players for the collectives. This year, Open Doors said it expects to process, and this is the number, folks, $100 million in payments for athletes, with about 80% coming through collectives. "It's the most important thing in college football," said Kyle Whittingham, head coach at Utah. This month, Utah's Crimson Collective announced that every scholarship football player will be able to drive a new $61,000 Dodge truck at no cost. "It's the most important thing in recruiting, which is the most important thing to your program," Mr. Whittingham said. Now, there are other examples of players that have transferred, and they have transferred because they were able to get a better deal somewhere else. In fact, at many of the schools, Southern Methodist being one of them, the collective tells athletes, "Don't discuss what you made with somebody else," in an attempt to be able to shift the money unequally to bigger players or more important players. "I just call my friends. We get a bunch of money together and pay football players," said Tom Dieters, a Michigan State alumnus living in Florida. He began hiring Spartan athletes like the football player making $750,000 to work for a charity he runs. "Their job, such as it is to promote the charity through their social media posts. The requirement is one post a month. Wouldn't you like to make $100,000 for making one post a month?" He said his goal is to make players happy. He conceded that the players do not actually do much to help his charity. Who are their followers? Kids. Kids' age, right? Mr. Dieter said, that's not exactly our target market. So how does this all affect schools like the University of Maine? Well, it's pretty clear. It's hard enough sometimes to get players to come to Orono because of the distance from where they live and for the fact that travel here is not always the easiest and the fact that we don't have the most appealing weather for playing outdoor sports at some times of the season. As the late Sean Walsh, former Maine hockey head coach, used to say, if you don't have the best of everything, do the best you have with, do the best you can with everything you have. Well, the thing we don't have is a tremendous amount of money. How many athletes will come to Maine, do well, and then be lured away by a bigger program where some car dealership gives them a car and gives them money? That kind of money doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist in a lot of places in America. This only came about through the hubris and the outright ignorance of the and stubbornness of the NCAA, because for years they had the chance to work a name, image, and likeness deal that would have benefited athletes and not gotten out of control. The other thing that's very interesting that this article points out is that at some point, Title IX may come into play here, as men athletes are getting benefits that are not available to female athletes in these schools. But at the University of Miami, in Florida, there was they've already been punished because a booster was crowing and boasting how he had bought two University of Miami women's basketball players, enticed them to come to the university by offering them money. That is specifically prohibited, but it doesn't appear that anywhere along the line the NCAA is doing anything about this. So the title of the article is College Football Now Has Wages Over $100,000. Let's think about how many college coaches at Division III don't make $100,000 a year. Let's think about the kid who makes $750,000 a year working at a school where the majority of the coaches on the staff don't make that much money. It's a very much akin to the way that superstars in the pros look down on their managers or their coaches because, hey, I'm making 10 times what you're making. Why do you get to tell me what to do? It's not healthy. It's not good. The combination of the pandemic, which really messed things up with the fifth year, I have no problem with the athletes getting at, but it just really screwed the whole recruiting and scholarship process up. The way we've suffered with the portal just allowing the willy-nilly transferring of people. And now this, the landscape in college football and the landscape in other major sports in college is going to get changed, and it's going to get changed dramatically. How will a kid who gets a chance to go to play hockey in Boston react when he gets $50,000 or $60,000 a year to do an ad for a car dealership and says, geez, I really wanted to go to Maine, but you know, $60,000 is a lot of money. So maybe it's time we start thinking about other ways to pay athletes for what they do. This is Bruce talking to you again from the road on a Sports Lit 101 on a Wednesday afternoon here on Downtown.